Confidently, as we head into hour number two, Mark and Hollywood came in and pretty much torched this joint, burned it to the ground. But still, no reason for you not to call. Talk about last night's championship game or anything else you want. 1-800-636-8686. Let's get the reaction. Frank in Boise, also known as at Mock Moda. Damn. Mark in Boston is DJ Jazzy Jeff to Mark in Hollywood's Fresh Prince. War clone on clone crime. Hope you did not miss that. That was some significant clone on clone crime. There are beefs, and then there's that. Then there's what's going on between the two of these guys. As I mentioned, James Kelly will have that phone call up on Facebook before you know it. Make sure you check out our Facebook page. I always direct you to the phone lines, Twitter, email. Check the Facebook page. There is good production value on the Facebook page. At 12wood tweets, Mark versus Mark, Hollywood 1, Boston nothing. At belligerent Nuck tweets, man's game, Hollywood.
Man's game, bitch.
At Hitman Canadian tweets, who will clean up the ashes of Mark in Boston after Mark in Hollywood just spewed that molten lava? Hashtag straight fire. At Matt T in TN98 tweets, where do I send the bill for a new radio? Mark from Hollywood just blew mine up with that straight fire. Epic. Seriously, that was some serious lava. It was that hot. If you missed it, check out our Facebook page or our daily podcast. 1-800-636-8686. It is toll free. Meantime, I've got Benjamin Watson coming up a little bit later on. Howard Beck is going to join me in hour number three. Meantime, let's talk some golf. Let's talk about something bigger than golf. Let's talk about the podcast. Jim Rohn podcast dropped yesterday. Listen up. The day is finally here. The day everybody has been asking for since I announced that I was going to launch the Jim Rohn podcast last summer. The day that has been 8 months in the making. The day Stephen John Elkington. In fact, I don't think I've ever dropped government on elk before. Stephen John Elkington makes his debut on my non-FCC policed format. It is here. The episode is out right now. It dropped yesterday, and what we're talking about is 33 minutes of absolutely unadulterated, unfiltered elk. There is some under oath truth right here. I mean this sincerely. I have never, ever heard elk like this, ever. And I've spent a pretty fair amount of time with elk, on the air and off the air. I have never heard elk like this, not even close. And if you've been around these parts for any length of time, you know that I've had elk on this show for the better part of two decades. The dude is a jungle legend. He is far and away every clone's favorite interview. It is elk, and it is everybody else. Elk owns half the real estate in Lil Alvey Sound Library. Or as one tweeter put it yesterday, he is jungle royalty. But I have been waiting for the right time to roll him out. I've been waiting for the absolute perfect time to put him on the pod. Because I could have done this months ago. I could have debuted this thing with him. And it took every ounce of self-restraint and control that I had to save elk for this week. Because it is no accident that I ran him down when I did. Because who better to preview the Masters than a true beauty who played in 11 of them himself? So I've got elk, I've got the Masters, and I've got a long-form format with no filter at all. And if you think that this sounds like maybe the best thing ever, you'd be right. Because it was. And as much as I'd love to play the entire thing for you right now, I'd rather you go find that podcast. Especially if you have not already. And I will tell you how to do so momentarily. This episode is a can't miss, especially for all of you Tiger honks. Because I did ask Elk right off the bat for his prediction on the cat this week at Augusta. And I've got to say, I was pretty well blown away by what he had to say when I asked him that question. How does he look to you right now, and how do you think he's going to do this week?
I think the cat's going to win the Masters. I just looking at the math, mate.
Holy shit. Elk, did you just say, did you just say what I think that you just said? I think the cat's going to win the Masters?
Yeah, mate. I think the cat's going to win the Masters. And I'm going to tell you why. He has sort of, I want to say it in my own terms, he's surfed the gauntlet. He's been embarrassed. He's been humiliated. He's been ridiculed. He's been abused by the media. And now he's come back out and he's popped out of this pimple that's just f***ing burst like a zit. And it's, and now he's in love. Everyone's in love with him. He's putting good. He's hitting wedges good. Mate, the rest of it's there. And let me just say this. Augusta, after playing two rounds, first 36 holes, Thursday, Friday, Cat's going to be there 140, 141, two or three under. He's going to be poised, right? And the pressure that Mickelson and Tiger are putting on the field is enormous this week, mate, because there's going to be some guys up there going to faint. They can't f***ing do it, mate. They're going to shit themselves. They're going to squirt the sandwich out the back. I mean, it's not going to happen.
What did I tell you about Elk? What did I tell you? Like, you know Elk on this show, and it sounds unlike any interview you'll ever hear on any show. And then there's Elk on the podcast. Classic, classic Elk. Now, I knew that Elk, I knew he was impressed with the way Tiger Woods had been playing. I did not expect him to pick him to win the Masters. And Elk's not just hot taking. Elk's not just throwing that out there. Elk obviously thinks that the cat's got what it takes. And that he's been to hell and back and wrecked his life 18 different ways, and that he popped like a zit. Elk, classic Elk, this is what makes him a jungle legend. And he was not short on thoughts on the cat either. My man laid out the love affair that the golf world has once again with El Gato.
The biggest variable in my mind was, how is he going to handle the people? How is he going to do that? And all of a sudden, he has all this new love, right? Everyone is just like, you know what? The guy's a f***ing douchebag. He's f***ed up his life 18 times. But you know what? We love him. We want him back. We want the red shirt. Mate, people say, you know, is he back? Or has ever said, mate, it's just the last f***ing chapter of the book, right? It's like a Sidney Sheldon novel. We've been here. We've been there. We've been there. We've been there. And now, I don't really give a f*** how the book finishes. I'm just glad I'm here.
I probably should let you know, in case you haven't figured this out already, and the podcast is not for everybody, it got profane. There is some profanity here. It got a little bit crass. And I have to admit, I was guilty of the same. So understand this. Maybe you want to go there because you love Elk, or maybe you want to go there because you want a Masters preview. Understand, it is profane. There is a disclaimer in front of it, but that one gets especially profane and pretty crass. And there's a lot more Tiger talk where that came from. Plus, Elk went in on hefty Phil Mickelson as only he can. So we chopped it up about these two dudes and the rest of the field. But he also went Elk and teed up some of his classic stories. Now, these are stories. There are a few stories that you have heard before, and there are a few stories that you have not heard before. And even if you have heard the stories, you have not heard them the way he tells them this time. You know, the story like when Colin Montgomery plowed a vat of custard during a match play lunch break. Once again, it is one of Elk's greatest hits. It is an all-timer. It is one of the best stories that I have ever heard in sports. If you've heard it before, you have never heard it like this. If you have not heard it before, you want to work your way there as soon as this show is over and listen to it. He did bust out some other material that he has never told me either on or off the air. And I'm not going to give away the entire thing, but I do have a small snippet of a story that he told me yesterday about that heated exchange that he got into with Bubba Watson a decade ago on tour.
I walk around, I push my nose up against him. I said, look, idiot, we don't do that out here, but here's what's going to happen when we get in. I'm going to kick your out of you. I'm going to flatten that nose, and you're going to get to pick where you want it flattened. I left it at that because I was playing good, mate. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, so we get in, and I'm not shaking his hand. We go into the locker, into the scorer's tent. There's two security guards and two guys from the tour. We go in. They go, Elk, we would rather you not say anything to the media about what Bubba did to you out there. And I said, okay, I'll respect that. So I go in, and I blew up in there and said, look, this is, you know, we don't do this on tour. You don't blow up at players like this. We're on TV. I mean, what are you, some kind of a clown? And I said, I'm going to knock the shit out of you, and I'm going to wait by your car where your name is, and I'm going to meet you out there. I'm going to flatten that ugly nose of yours over there. Well, he busts out crying.
I mean, seriously, you believe this? This podcast is amazing. It's incredible. So there's the backstory on Bubba. We didn't know about that. We knew there was a major issue on the track. We did not know that Elk told him, hey, you bleep, I'm going to wait for you at your car. And I'm going to bust that ugly nose on your face.
A car.
A nose. And a car. Elk was feeling it. And this is why I've been waiting for the right time to bust out that podcast with Elk. It is the week of the Masters. He called his shot. He told some amazing stories. If this does not get you to that pod, then nothing will, because there are 30 more minutes of pure Elk gold and only one place to get it. You cannot get it here. I cannot have that kind of conversation on this program, but I can have it on the podcast, which is why we do that podcast. Now, here's where I want everybody to pay attention, because I know a lot of you have no idea how to get this content. For whatever reason, you're intimidated by podcasts because you don't know where to go. It's easy. It is so easy. If you have an iPhone, use the podcast app, which comes preloaded onto your blower. Search Jim Rome Podcast. It's that easy. Then you can listen to all 30 episodes for free right there. If you have an Android device, download any podcast player. Search Jim Rome Podcast. If you do not have a smartphone, just go to jimrome.com and listen there. If none of this works for you and you're still lost or you're still confused, simply call us up and we will get you there. I do this podcast because I want you to hear this podcast. I do this podcast because I cannot have conversations like this on this show. Now go find it or ask for help. We are here to get you where you need to be. And honestly, if you're a fan of this show, then you've got no excuse for not running down the Steve Elkington podcast right after this show, especially when it might have been his best appearance ever. How can you miss that? You can't. Find it or hit us up. You've got no excuse at this point. That is some unbelievable content.
I'm going to flatten Elk, that nose, and you're going to get to pick where you want it flattened.
I'm going to flatten that bleeping nose, and you get to pick where it's flattened. That was Elk talking about Bubba Watson back in the day. And Elk gets going on John Daly, too. And Phil Mickelson. And Monty. Dude, the custard story is absolutely incredible. I mean, I fell out. Like, I literally had to get back in the chair. And some of you obviously have not heard it yet. And only heard that. At Hop Hayes tweets. My God. Squirt. The sandwich.
They're going to squirt the sandwich out the back. I mean,
thanks for my new favorite saying. Dave McNulty tweets, Rome, best podcast ever. You and Elk made my day. As usual, I did nothing. I threw up a few lobs, and he took care of the rest. One email as I go to break. Romy, I listened to the Elk interview twice last night. The second time immediately after it ended, because I had to hear that Bubba Watson story again. And then said, screw it, and I listened to the rest because it was damn good and funny. Never heard Elk unleashed like that, and I'm pretty sure I can decipher what was bleeped out. But holy bleep, you guys had to bleep out on a podcast. That's how nice he got. I have been listening since I was 17 in 1996, and I have never heard Elk like that. Anyway, thanks for the podcast. You're crushing it, brah. War global warming? War Shamone. James in Denver. God, he's right about that, too. For the first time ever, we bleeped something on a podcast. Isn't that the whole point of the podcast? That you don't have to bleep anything ever? It's unfiltered? That got to the point where we had to bleep something on the podcast. Not here for the show. That's a given. We bleeped a few things on the podcast. Just a few. But that's how blue that got a couple of times. This email just says, best podcast ever, period. Jim and Indy, it's going to be tough to top that one.
Popped out of this pimple that's just f***ing burst like a zit.
Like a zit. That might be a drop, huh, Alvy? Popped out of a pimple like it burst. Like a zit. All right, then. When we return, your reaction to what you just heard, if you want, or go someplace else with it. Villanova, straight up dynasty. There is no better coach. There is no better program right now than what's going on there. Benjamin Watson at 40 pounds.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Well, judging from the reaction, now you know what I mean. I said you've never heard Steve Elkington like this. You've heard Elk before. There's a certain expectation, but you have never heard this guy like this. Joey DiDonato tweets, I just listened to Elk on the Jim Rome podcast. Absolutely hilarious. He is the best. It's a must listen. Thanks, Joe. It's pretty amazing. But again, and see, the bar has been raised so high, you can't do that every single time. There's not, the reason you can't do that every single time is because there is no guy like Elk. There is no guest like Elk. And I made the point to him on the podcast. It's a pretty amazing thing that when I look back over my career and the history of the jungle, that this is the most popular interview, the most popular guest, the favorite jungle guest ever. And how amazing is that? That I've done this now for more than two decades, and the most popular guest ever on this show is a golfer. And not just a golfer, but a golfer from Australia. And that nobody has ever taken to this guy like Elk. And the reason for that, there's nobody like him. And why? Because the guy talks junk. Amazing junk. And he's an amazing storyteller. Something else he mentioned in the podcast. I don't want to give the whole thing away. But he talks about the reason he could tell such an amazing story is because growing up, they didn't spend a lot of time in front of the TV. They didn't spend a lot of time with the technology that we now have. They had time on their hands to tell stories. This is where a lot of that entertainment came from. Because let's face it, it takes two things to tell a great story. One, you got to be able to tell a great story. And number two, you have to have great experiences. You have to have amazing experiences in order to tell a great story. Unless you just make it up. And he's not making any of this stuff up. He's got crazy stories like that. So that's Elk. And without giving away the entire thing, there is a lot more where that came from. Make sure you find our podcast. It's up right now. Got the NFL draft coming up in a few weeks. And as far as I'm concerned, not a second too soon. This thing cannot get here fast enough. 3 weeks from Thursday. Checking Twitter very quickly. At SA Sports Honk tweets, Rome, is it Bubba Watson or is it Blubba Watson? Dude cries more than Jeff in San Antonio. Sincerely, Elk. Hashtag Rubadonga.
Rubadonga.
I mean, Elk said it point blank. He threatened to kick his ass. And he told him he was going to, and he said he was going to wait at his car for him. And in his words, Bubba cried.
What are you, some kind of a clown?
If you're joining us late and you're wondering what that was all about, Bubba lost it on the track back in the day and was dropping a bunch of F-bombs and other things, and Elk took great offense to that. Number one, he said, that's not how we do business out here. He said Bubba was a young guy. He didn't know better at that time. He said, that's not how we carry ourselves out here. That's not how we do business out here. And by the way, I was playing really, really well that day. I'm not having it.
I walk around, I push my nose up against him. I said, look, idiot, we don't do that out here. But here's what's going to happen when we get in. I'm going to kick your out of you. I'm going to flatten that nose, and you're going to get to pick where you want it flattened. I left it at that because I was playing good, mate. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, so we get in, and I'm not shaking his hand. We go into the locker, into the scorer's tent. There's two security guys and two guys from the tour. We go in. They go, Elk, we would rather you not say anything to the media about what Bubba did to you out there. And I said, okay, I'll respect that. So I go in, and I blew up in there and said, look, this is, you know, we don't do this on tour. You don't blow up at players like this. We're on TV. I mean, what are you, some kind of a clown? And I said, I'm going to knock the shit out of you, and I'm going to wait by your car where your name is, and I'm going to meet you out there. I'm going to flatten that ugly nose of yours over there. Well, he busts out crying.
I haven't heard him do a guy like that since he did Tommy Smothers back in the day. And again, he was offended by that. I mean, there's a right way and a wrong way. And Elk's one of those guys. He's out there to have a good time, but he's out there doing business when he's got that bat in his hand. And he obviously made the point to Bubba, listen, that's not what we do out here. And it reminds of a story. We do not get into this in the podcast, but it's also a legendary story. He once saw Tommy Smothers. Remember the Smothers brothers? He once saw him, and he didn't care much for his act either. and he called him out on it. He told that story on this show, but not the podcast.
I wanted to tell you, Ron, about Tommy Smothers, that guy. We were up at Pebble Beach, and Clay Walker, you know, my buddy, a country singer, on Friday night, we do this nice little thing for the volunteers. I go over there, he goes over there, he plays some songs, and I tell a few stories. We take our wives and kids. You know, it's just the volunteers, a little barbecue. So we're getting ready, you know, we did it last year. They loved it. They wanted us to come back. And Tommy Smothers comes in. I don't even know who Tommy Smothers is. And everyone's like, he grabs the mic and he's up there. He's dropping F-bombs and he's swearing and trying to tell these jokes. He's doing Round the Moon and Rock the Baby in the Cradle. I'm like, I turned to my wife. I said, who is this idiot? I mean, I don't even know who he is. I mean, what a great country where you can just throw your yo-yo around. I got up there and told him, look, Tommy, I said, I don't know who you are, man. I know you're some sort of a legend from some kiddie show that you did 40 years ago. But I said, how about you and your F-bombs and your yo-yo take it all away? all the marshals and everyone started getting him out of there. He finished up leaving. He got embarrassed.
So that dates 2000. That was back in 2000. And the guy laughing in the background was not me, but John Cook. Remember John Cook, who was always a good friend of the program? And Cookie was good friends with Elk. John Cook was in studio that day. Elk was on the phones. And Elk told that legendary story about Tommy Smothers. Yeah, it was pretty rich. Elk taking offense to Smothers' F-bombs. That's rich. If you listen to this podcast, that's rich. I think what he took offense to, though, was not the F-bombs, but the yo-yo. He said, what a great country this is where you can just get up here with your F-bombs and throw your yo-yo around. I don't know who you are, mate. I guess you were some legend from some kiddie show 40 years ago. I remember at that time, and that was the year 2000, that worked its way back to Smothers, and he was hot. He was not happy about that at all. So Elk's been doing this a long, long time. That soundbite was 18 years ago. And if you listen to him on the podcast, which I taped yesterday, which is now available, obviously Elk has not lost anything on his fastball at all. In fact, he's still running it up there 100+. Elk was in the rarest form. At Case Colorado tweets, damn it, Jim. I had not subscribed to the podcast before, but Elk was the bait that hooked me. It's a good decision. Casey in NH tweets, my fantasy is Elk in the smack off. Imagine his take on Left's ears. He'd be like, man, I'm going to bust your ear. I'm going to flatten your ear, and you can decide where you want it flattened or how you want it flattened. At Real Eric J tweets, I want to travel around the world with Elk and live his life. We all do. He travels around in The Big Show. And for those of you who do not know what The Big Show is, I mentioned it, but we didn't get into it too fully. The Big Show is an 1,100-square-foot mansion on wheels where Elk lives. His RV, his mobile home, his mansion on wheels is pretty much nicer than any home of anybody listening right now. It's absolutely incredible. It is a mansion on wheels. He's got a pro shop in this car. He's got a lounge in this car. He's got a putting green in this car. He very clearly has a bar in this car. He's got a master bedroom. He's got this amazing kitchen, all stainless steel. The finishes are amazing. You've never seen anything like this. This RV is better than any house I've ever seen, I think. All right, more on that. When we come back, Benjamin Watson, tight end for the Saints, joins me next. Howard Beck coming up in hour number three. Man.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Still laughing about Elk. I'm still laughing about some of the things that he said on that podcast that I did not play on the show. Clones, snoring is disrespectful, it's offensive, and you need to stop right now. The way you do that is by getting a Zipa. Get a Zipa, make everybody happy. Zipa is 100% guaranteed. Guaranteed to work, ZYPPAH.com. ZYPPAH.com. We are efforting Benjamin Watson, who I'll have momentarily. And again, I'm trying to encourage you to make a telephone call, 1-800-636-8686. I've got thoughts on Josh Rosen, Jim Mora, everybody losing their collective bleep over what Mora said about Rosen. What did he mean when he said that? Was there an actual criticism? Is there a beef there? I mean, now you know why people never, ever say anything at all. Because if somebody says one thing, And it's almost nothing at all. If you see this reaction, you see why people are motivated to never say anything. All right, that's always coming up a little bit later on. But as promised, we are joined by a tight end for the New Orleans Saints. He is an author. He is a Super Bowl champion. He led the Ravens with 61 receptions last season. He was their 2017 Ed Block Courage Award winner. He is a two-time Walter Payton Man of the Year finalist. He's a winner of the Bart Starr Award. He was the 32nd pick overall in 2004 out of Georgia. Benjamin Watson is my guest. Benjamin, good to have you back. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. You make me feel like a boxer coming out of the corner or something, man.
My man, you got a great resume. You really do. It's great to have you back on. Let me first ask you, you signed with the Saints last week, which means you're going to return for a second stint with that team. So how does it feel to be back with the Saints once again?
It feels great. It feels great. You know, going into year 15 and not quite knowing where you're going to be, it's always great to go back to a place where you have some familiarity. You know, used to being in that offense, familiar with the city, know the people in the building, kind of a short reunion of sorts, but it's a blessing to be able to play again and also to be able to join a team that has been doing so well as of late.
Benjamin Watson joining us, and we'll get into that in a minute, but also you're reunited with a quarterback in Drew Brees. Now, you've played with a lot of really good quarterbacks in your career. What is it that makes Brees so special and so different?
Well, I can remember going to New Orleans and hearing about the legend of Drew Brees and then experiencing really the way he prepares. You know, he's a guy who I remember after practice coming in to work out and in the gym you can see into the indoor facility and seeing Drew out there going through his progressions by himself, nobody on the field, going through his progressions, calling plays to himself, visualizing where he was going to go with each football that he had a chance to throw in the coming game. And really seeing what it meant to prepare to succeed. And I think that's what separates him from a lot of guys. You know, a lot of guys have incredible talent. A lot of guys prepare very well. I'm sure there are many that prepare maybe in the same way. But he leaves no stone unturned. He works really hard. He also has a great rapport, I think, with the guys because there's that trust factor there. He wants to get things right and will always stay late to get it done.
We're talking to Benjamin Watson. You know, you also mentioned that one of the reasons you come back, aside from the familiarity, is it's a really good team. It's a team that's loaded on both sides of the ball. They had a strong season last year. So how good can this team be this year?
Well, you know, every year is different. One thing I've learned in this league throughout my career is that, you know, one year doesn't mean you're going to have success. And just because you have a poor season before doesn't limit you from what you can attain the next year. It is important, however, to build on your momentum. And so I know Coach Payton and the coaches there will understand that. I know that, you know, going into OTAs, training camp, mini camp, those sorts of things, they will remind us that just because you had success the year before doesn't mean you will have it. The great thing about this team is I think they did really well in the draft the last couple of years. They've got a lot of great young players who have contributed. It's always important to be able to build your team through the draft, have guys that are going to be there for years. And whenever you can get a few draft picks that are rookies or second-year players that contribute the way these guys did, I think that bodes well for the future.
And then, of course, you got the leaders and the vets. So you've been a leader every single place you've been. So how do you approach it when you come to a team that's coming off the season that it had? I mean, do you go in there and try to feel your way out a little bit, or do you try to lead from the moment you step on that practice field?
Well, I think, you know, anytime you've been, you're considered kind of the old man. There's some sort of leadership that comes with that. But you also understand that, hey, this team has been successful in the past, especially last year. There are leaders on this team that when I was there a few years ago, were younger players. Now they've taken that role. You know, I think of a guy like Cam Jordan or Mark Ingram. The list goes on. Teron Armstead. Guys who are leaders on that team now. And so it's not incumbent upon me as a guy coming in to try to assume that role. You know, honestly, my job right now is to see, to learn what to do, to learn maybe the differences in the offense from the last time I was there, to find my role throughout the course of the offseason program, to earn my role on this team because it is a new team. And then those that leadership, the role of leadership, however that looks this time, It will be there, but it may look different than it has in the past.
Benjamin Watson joining us, talking about his return to the Saints. You know, you play that game long enough, you're going to get hurt. You play it long enough, you're going to probably be seriously hurt. You tore your Achilles, and you missed your first season in Baltimore. Then you come back, and you lead the team in receptions last season. How much pride do you take in the fact that you were able to come back and then contribute the way you did?
It was really amazing to be able to step back on the field. After tearing my Achilles you know, that injury is tough. It was, I've had a number of injuries, and I would say the Achilles was probably the toughest. Well, it was the toughest rehab that I've had. I remember times sitting in the, at the house, and my wife was taking care of all of us. We have five children plus me, which equals six, because I couldn't do anything. And so it was really just tough, I would say, for all of us, and really a great victory when I was able to come back onto the field. That being said, making it through all 16 games, contributing the way that I did, you know, and being able to try to help the team win, earning the trust back with the quarterback, with the offense, I really felt blessed to have that opportunity.
It's got to be some days when you're trying to rehab from something like that, and it's such a brutal rehab physically and mentally. There's going to be down days, right? There's going to be days where maybe even you think, you know, I don't know if I'm going to push through this. I don't know if I'll ever be the guy that I once was. But you talked about how powerful the motivation was for you and the fact that you want to make an example for your kids and set an example for them. What was the example then that you were looking to set, and what did you want your kids to learn from you going through that process?
I mean, my kids literally pray for my Achilles every single day. Like, we pray at night before we go to bed, and we sit around it, and the kids would be like, Lord, I pray for Daddy's Achilles. Hmm. Even a year after, once I was back on the field, they still were, because, you know, honestly, it takes years before you get back to yourself. You know, I kind of have a new normal of what I'm able to do, and it still isn't like it was before, but obviously it's functional enough to play, and there's still different challenges there. But I wanted them to see me go through some sort of adversity and fight back. I didn't know if that meant coming back onto the field and playing, or maybe it was, hey, guys, I tried as hard as I could. I fought as hard as I could, but it's just not going to work out as far as football goes. But you saw Daddy fight, because there are going to be times in your life where you are knocked down. There's going to be times when you fail. There's going to be times when you have injuries if you're in sports, or maybe in whatever you're in, there's going to be some sort of disappointment. But my hope is that you see, you learn perseverance, that you learn sacrifice, that you learn faith, all those sorts of things. And so when I was able to come back on the field, it really was a great celebration, not just for me, but for my entire family.
We're talking to Benjamin Watson. You know, that kind of response, really, this whole conversation leads me to the next thing. You were voted the Ravens' Ed Block Courage Award winner last season, and the voting's done by your teammates. What's it mean to you? And we're talking about a locker room of guys that I know you respect, a brotherhood, alphas. I mean, the biggest alphas of alphas. What's it mean to you to know that you've got that kind of respect from people like that?
No, it's really humbling. You know, you know, we go through every single day as a team. You know, you fight through different things. You kind of gel together over the course of a season, over the course of the off season. And it's one thing when you know there's a certain level of respect there, but for guys to vote you in and for guys to give you that honor is really humbling. And being in Baltimore is special as well for the Ed Block Courage Award, because Ed Block was a trainer there for the Baltimore Colts. And so going through that weekend and all the great charity events that are surrounding the Ed Block Foundation, being the representative from the Ravens was extra special.
Now, I would argue that as great a career as you've had, I would argue that you've done as well off the field as you have on. As an example, you were a finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. And as I mentioned at the top, I mean, you're a Super Bowl champion. So when your career is over, what do you think is going to mean more to you, your accomplishments on the field or the respect that you've generated for your work off of the field?
You know, it's ironic, because as an athlete, as a tight end, I always wanted to be known for catching touchdowns and playing great offense. And things that I'm known for is making a tackle on Champ Bailey years ago, which was a defensive play, and stuff off the field. And it's kind of ironic that guys like, you know, it's not about you. And that's something that I've learned over the course of my career, is that, you know, it's not about me. It's not always what I want, the accolades that I want. But people can be reached through the avenue of sport and what I've done in sport, but also outside of that. And I consider it really a great privilege to be known for many of those other things, because those things are really what's going to last. The opportunity to share about my faith, the opportunity to help people that are in dire situations, the opportunities to fight for justice for those who are lacking, the opportunity to help people who are in need. Those are all things that I really hold dear, and those are things that, again, talking about my children and talking even about the legacy that I'm able to leave in the locker room, those are things that I want guys to really grasp. You know, the football stuff is important, and don't get me wrong, you know, I'm still striving to one day, you know, be the best football player that I can possibly be. But being known for those things off the field really goes, in my opinion, a lot further. And that's the legacy, and that's the change that I want to have in every community that I go to.
Yeah, so when you're impacting so many people doing those things, and you've got so many things that are so important to you off of the field, so many things that you could be doing, what is it that keeps you playing football?
Yeah, well, the opportunity, honestly, the door that opens. After this past season, we were prepared for it to be my last. 2 years ago, I was prepared for it to be my last. After this year, we'll kind of reevaluate and do the same thing. I've always said that if the door, you know, shuts, then I'm fine with that, and it's time to move on. But the door seems to be open right now. And football is a great avenue. It's a great platform. It's a great job, you know, to provide for my family. It's all those things, and it gives me the opportunity to do any of the other things that I think will take me and my family into the future as far as being change agents in my community. But when I entered into the league in 2004, I never imagined that I would play this long. Honestly, after like 5 years and being hurt so much, I was ready to quit.
Sure.
But God has allowed me to come back, you know, I consider it a blessing to be able to keep playing.
Benjamin Watson joins us for a few more moments. I want to ask you about a powerful post on Instagram over the weekend. It was a photo of you and your grandfather who passed away on April 1st, 2004, only 24 days before you were selected in the NFL draft. How painful was it to lose him then? And then what kind of an impact did he have on you?
It was hard. He's my father's dad. And so we lived right around the corner in Norfolk, Virginia, on the other side of the block from my grandparents. And so we would, you know, as kids, we would go walk around the block to grandma and granddaddy's house and hang out in the garage. And, you know, he'd give us sodas and lollipops and stuff, and we'd hang out while he would work on his Cadillac and stuff like that. And so I have many fond memories of my grandfather. He used to give us haircuts and all those sorts of things. And so he really loved football. He loved the Cowboys, ironically, even though we lived in Virginia. But as I went through college and as I was getting close to the NFL, he started getting sick. He had colon cancer. Eventually, as I said in the post on April 1st, April Fool's Day, he passed away 24 days before. And so, you know, many people go through grief. Many people lose people that they love. And so for me, it was really tough, especially being drafted and him knowing that he would want to be there and see it. So it was emotional when I got drafted. But really, I think that just his legacy of being a strong man, a father, a husband, of the way he led my father, and now me two generations later, I can really see the ramifications of the sacrifices that he made.
As mentioned, a really, really powerful post. He is a tight end for the Saints. He returns there. An author, a Super Bowl champ, and I ran down that resume as well. Benjamin Watson, our guest. Benjamin, so good to have you back on. Always enjoy the conversation with you, and thanks for making time for it. Great to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Have a great day. Benjamin Watson. Boy, there are not very many guys like that. Sincerely, what a different dude. Great guy, great player, amazing leader, and an agent for change, as he points out. We'll come back. Hour number three coming up. Still to come, Howard Beck, open phones, my thoughts on Jim Mora and Josh Rosen, and more. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere. Third hour, straight ahead.